to continue our message from last week called Embrace the Cross, as we're looking forward to Easter coming up about a month from now. So if you want to go ahead and turn to Hebrews chapter 12, that's where we're going to spend most of our time today in the Word. Last week I shared about taking the cross, dying to self. A real pick-me-up kind of message, right? Dying to self. Isn't that what we always want to hear? Dying to self. But you know, it's part of the gospel. When we bring ourselves to Christ, it involves making Him Lord of our life. And so that's what we're focusing on, is a refresher, because sometimes we're like the crowds last week we read about. They're just kind of going along. And we need to realize that God is calling us to lay our life down. Jesus simply said, "You cannot be my disciple unless you take up your own cross." And that's where we started last week. This week we're going to pick up in Hebrews chapter 12. So our mission is to follow Christ in every facet of life here at New Song. And as we look at Hebrews chapter 12 this morning, we're going to see exactly what that means. In one aspect of that, every facet, one of those facets we're going to look at here in Hebrews chapter 12, we're going to read the first 11 verses. It says, "Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses..." Now, what's the therefore? Therefore, remember, this is following the Hebrews chapter 11, the Hall of Faith, and all these people who have served the Lord in faith. So since we have this great cloud of all these people who have gone before us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. For you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin, and you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? But if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Furthermore, we had earthly fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they discipline us for a short time, as seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, so that we may share his holiness. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet to those who have been trained by it, afterwards it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness." It's a long-winded passage there, talking about this theme of embracing the cross, dying to self. And I want to call out, there's so much in this passage. We could speak for days and write whole books on just this passage in Hebrews alone. I want to call out just a couple words for us to focus on here. So, first off, fixing our eyes on Jesus there in verse 2 as that example. As we're striving to model our lives after his, he is our example. And so when we look at Christ's example, what did he do? He laid down his life. He said, "Father, not my will, but your will be done." Have you ever seen somebody run a marathon? Maybe you've run a marathon. I have not. The Ermans were big runners. But can you imagine someone running a marathon, and then after the first mile, somebody hands them a cardboard box,
So here's this person, they got the number on their shirt, and they got the fancy, you know, shorts and the fancy shoes, and they're running along. And all of a sudden, somebody hands them a cardboard box. So now I'm running this marathon, I got a cardboard box. What am I supposed to do with this? This box isn't helping me run any faster. It's slowing me down. There's some drag as I'm trying to get some speed here. And then about mile three, someone runs up and drops in a jar of pickles. So now I'm carrying this box. I'm trying to run my race, and I got this box in front of me. And now I got, and then mile six, somebody puts a dozen eggs in there. It's like, hey, I got somebody at the end of the line. Can you take this to? Well, I'm supposed to be running this race. What are you talking about, right? That doesn't make sense. But you know, in our own lives, in our own walk with Christ, we have some encumbrances. One translation says the weight. These things that weigh us down when we're trying to run the race that they're talking about here. It's kind of a silly example, but in our own Christian lives, we need to look around and say, what is it that's slowing me down in my race towards Christ? And it says, not only every encumbrance, but also the sin. It mentions the sin again down in verse 4. You know, have you ever found yourself crying out to God, God, help me. Why won't you help me? I'm desperate. But sometimes, I would say probably a lot of the times, the whole root of our problems is us, right? And if we have known sin in our life, that's not going to help us win the race. And we don't talk a lot about sin these days. We probably should do that more. But if we have things in our life where we know we are not following the Lord, where we are willfully not submitted to Christ, that is a weight. That is an encumbrance that's going to prevent us in the race. And so as we talk about dying to self and embracing the cross, we need to take a look at what sin is in our life. We would strive for none of that. That at any time God shows us or speaks to us, this is when he puts his finger on this, says, Ashley, you really need to deal with this. That we would just respond, why, of course, Lord, I'll take care of that right now. I confess that. But it's not like that all the time, is it? Sometimes these strongholds in our lives, these sins, take some more effort to root out. And so we want to examine ourselves as we look at this. The other thing that I noticed, I couldn't help but notice in this passage, did you notice how many times the word discipline appears here? If we count these up, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the next set of verses, 6, 7, 8, 9, 9 times he uses the word discipline. Do you think there's something there for us to learn from? Discipline. Nobody likes going to the woodshed, as they used to say. I don't know if you got whippings when you were a kid. I remember there was a whipping I'll never forget when I was a kid. And now discipline can come in many different forms. But for me, it was the belt or the switch or something like that. But discipline comes in lots of different ways. But notice, though, back here in verse 5, 6, it says, for those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines. And that this discipline is equated with legitimacy as children of God. Here in this passage, that if God just says, go on about your way and never helps us grow, never confronts us with things in our life that we're to deal with, he wouldn't love us. But by his love, he does confront us and ask us to lay things down, to take the cross and to die to self and embrace the cross. And so that's what we're focusing on here in this passage. Now there's another thing that, a tip for you as you do your Bible study. Look for the word so that, or the word for, because that tells us what is God trying to get across. What's the purpose? What is the purpose of all this? So we see so that and for in this passage here. It says, so that you will not lose heart. So that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Because if you're running a marathon with a box and a jar of pickles and a dozen eggs, you're going to get tired pretty quick, right? So he doesn't want us to grow weary. He doesn't want us to lose heart. And you think about it as a parent. When you're disciplining your child, you're not doing that to give them a bad day. They have a bad day when you discipline them, typically, or you probably didn't do it right. But you're looking long-term for their development long-term. And that's what God is looking at in us. So that you will not grow weary and lose heart, it is for discipline that you endure. So discipline itself is an end that we would be able to look at our own lives and check ourselves without having to wait on God to do that, and we begin to monitor our own lives for that. It's for your good. It's for our good. It's not for our harm. It's for our good, so that we may share His holiness. Wow. So you mean to tell me that when God is disciplining me, that I can share His holiness? Wow. There's really something to this. He cannot trust His holiness to anyone, necessarily, but someone who has laid down their life, their will. So if we just summarize these four purposes then of discipline, embracing the cross, dying to self, is so that we won't grow weary and lose heart. Because if we're running this race half in and half out, if we say that Christ is Lord of our life, but He's really not, then we are going to get weary with this constant battle between my will and God's will. My will and God's will. But that discipline is to help us lay down our will and seek His, just as Christ did. And it's for our good, so that we may share His holiness. So that's His purposes. So as I shared last week, I shared about September 12, 1990. If you weren't here, you can go listen to the recording. And I talked about how God asked me when I was a sophomore in college to take my fiance and place her on the altar and turn 180 degrees and look at Him only and to make Him first in my life. That was very difficult. I want to talk now about a time in my life when God was working this discipline in my heart. And I share this as an example of part of my testimony. I'm not saying that everybody's life has to look exactly like mine, not at all. But this is a rather recent experience. And I'm going to be, can I be vulnerable with you all this morning? Will you not throw me out? All right. If I really let you see. I have an excerpt from my journal. This June 8th, 2015, Jack and Susanna, where's Susanna and Alex, some others, myself, we were in Nepal. And this mission trip to Nepal was simultaneously some of the highest highs I've ever had in my life and some of the lowest lows I've ever had in my life. Now, their experiences may have been all roses while we were there in Nepal. Mine was not. So I'm going to share part of my experience. And I want to be careful that you don't color that the entire mission trip was a bummer. It was not. It was amazing. Absolutely amazing mission trip. But there, have you ever reached one of those places in your life where you say, God, I'm done. I can't do this any longer. I am done. I reached that point in Nepal, and I want to read some things from my journal. You know, it's one thing to go outside of your comfort zone for an afternoon, but if you go outside of your comfort zone for an extended period of time, it really begins to work on the old self. The flesh. And I'm going to sound like a crybaby as I read some of this transparently from my journal. It'll sound like a Facebook rant, maybe. And I can laugh about some of these things now, But in that moment, it was very real. And I have to say, sharing the gospel with people who had never heard the name of Jesus before was amazing. To think that Jesus told the disciples when he left to go into all the world and take this message. And I was actually doing that with these four wrinkled little Hindu grandmothers. And I shared the gospel with them. And I said, have you ever heard this story before? And they said, no, we've never heard this story before. So this was an amazing time. But in the midst of this, I'll just go ahead and read, I guess, here. I've edited some of this down, but and this is what I wrote in my journal. The filter is coming off. My flesh hit the wall today, and the flesh is winning over the spirit. I haven't had a good night's rest in 8 days. I haven't seen my ankles in days. No matter how much water I drink, my ankles remain swollen. I am hot, sweaty, sticky, 23 and a half hours of the day. There's nowhere to get cool. The best part of my day is the shower at the end, even though it smells like lake water. I cannot remember the last time I had a solid bowel movement. Sorry, really transparent there. The mattress on my bed is hard as a rock. Now, literally, my hip bones on the inside were bruised from rolling. I just maybe get 4 hours of sleep a night rolling back and forth on this mattress. My hips were literally bruised on the inside. In the flesh, there are no answers for the plight of these people. How does compassion turn to numbness? There's nowhere I can go to get a reprieve from the physical and mental shock. I really don't like momos. Now, if you've been to Nepal on our trip with us, this inside joke there, momos were their national dish, right? And I had enough of momos. My email inbox taunts me with Papa John's pizza coupons. Right? Yeah. I used to like Indian food until I ate it for a week. You know, this is just being real. Plans change daily. Communication is neither clear nor complete. Some of you are OCD and you find it really hard to follow someone who doesn't know where they're leading. And it's just this language barrier, working with another team, trying to be gracious, back and forth. Someone needs to take the barking German shepherd chained under the hotel stairs to a happy farm 3 wards away and release him to a land where he will never again wake a hotel patron 6 times per night. That was their security system. They had a German shepherd chained under the stairwell that was all this pretty, like a marble type stairwell, but created this great echo all the way up to all the rooms. Hospitality is a double-edged sword. Constant smiling and apologizing to smooth over cultural differences and weak stomachs. Gushy kindness has a short shelf life when mixed with culture shock and sleep deprivation. I am physically, mentally, and spiritually beyond my limits. I can't do this. I'm never coming back, and missions work is not for me if this is what it's like. That's what I wrote in my journal. The whole time, the other half of my brain is saying, did you just write that? Are you serious? Crucify the flesh thoroughly. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I became all things to all men. When I'm weak, he is strong. I die daily. All these phrases that have been drilled into my mind in years of being in the church are coming up against this wall that I had hit in the pit of selfishness when my flesh was being grinded away Now, this was my very first mission trip, all right? 9 hours, 45 minutes around the world in time zone times. Don't ask me why it wasn't an even 10 hours. I don't know. It was 9 hours, 45 minutes was the time zone offset in Nepal. But anyway, I was halfway around the world. You know, I didn't take a little easy trip. This was just grating my flesh. And God was using this, though, to discipline me. So that was the evening of the seventh day. The next entry is from 4 a.m. on the eighth day. Psalm 6:6. I am weary with my moaning. Every night I flood my bed with tears. I drench my couch with weeping. So only through brokenness and abject desperation do we reach the end of ourself and press into the deep places of God. The refiner's fire is not kind to our comforts, our force of will, our superficial relationship with God. You've turned the corner when you no longer fight it, but welcome and embrace it. Remember, this is His kindness at work inside you. Now, this was after 2 hours of me just weeping, on kneeling beside my bed. Dante was my roommate from Chicago at one point. He's like, dude, are you all right? It's like, it's all right. I'm good. The Lord's doing some work here. It's like I can feel God probing inside my chest, inside my soul, like a surgeon swapping out the last traces of disease before he closes the wound. I can see the gauze gripped in the forceps as he moves into the corners to collect the last little bits. New life and healing are just on the other side. Only then can God's power be free from the constraints of my flesh. Only then will I dance in freedom over my own grave. Only then will I know the surrendered power of Christ. I've come up a level tonight. As dawn begins to break and the birds begin to sing, 2 hours of heart surgery by the Master. I haven't wept like this in years. God is breaking up the depths. At the same time, I ask, is it over already, Lord? And He says, yes. It was just finishing up work begun years ago. You're ready. Go get him. I hop off the surgery table, a new man, a little lighter, a lot stronger. Hallelujah. Now I thank Him for the wound. The wound is closed. There's more room for God inside. God's deep touch was familiar, warm, and comforting. I could feel His good intentions in the midst of the pain, and it was reassuring. We've been here together before, but it's been years. When God disciplines us, here in Hebrews 12, we just read, it's for our good. It's for the peaceful fruit of righteousness. When we reach the end of ourselves and we say in desperation, God, I'm done. I can't do this any longer. You know what? We are exactly right. I am done. I can't do this. It has to be done in His strength. Galatians 2:20. I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Yet not I, but Christ lives in me. And the life that I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave Himself for me. Now, I know that doesn't match what's on the slide because that's the version that I memorized it in when I was a teenager in VBS. As a kid, I am crucified. 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 I've been beaten. If we think about what does that mean for Jesus, mocked, spit on, punched with Christ. But it's no longer I who live. It's not about me. It's not me that's alive. Now notice in the midst of this, live, life, live, live, love. There's love in the midst of this. There's life in the midst of this. In the midst of embracing the cross, we will find more life than we have ever found in our relationship with the Lord. In going through the refiner's fire, dying to self, we will find the life and the peace and the freedom that we have been seeking, the freedom from that constant battle between my will and His will. Galatians 5:22 follows that up. Now those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. Notice the initiative there is on us. It's not saying I'm waiting here in my selfishness, God, for you to come and take this from me. It's saying I've reached the point now where I see where I need to embrace the cross, and I'm willingly following the model of Christ, laying my life down and embracing the cross here. I've crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. So I talked about last week how Jesus said, unless you hate your family, you're not worthy to be called my disciple. And we talked about how that was an exaggeration. It basically means that we have to love Him first above everything else. And I shared the story of how I laid my fiance on the altar. I shared the story of how I died to myself in Nepal. And then even more recent, January 1st, 2016. This was Faith Walkers a year ago. Huge time for me with the Lord. Another one of these times where God was working on my will versus His will. And it was during this time that the previous year, I had been praying for a long time about what God's role was for me here at New Song and about seeking to become an elder. But I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready. There was a lot of things God had to do in me first to prepare me for that. And part of that happened at Faith Walkers. Now, this experience in Nepal was only 6 months earlier. It was still very fresh in my mind of intentionally laying down my life for Christ. And then at Faith Walkers, it's kind of like I still owned that big picture. It's my life. There's a song. Who sings that? Is it Bon Jovi who sings it? It's my life, right? Sorry, flashback there. It's my life, right? It's my life. But no, when we surrender our life to Christ, it's no longer my life. So God was speaking to me loud and clear at Faith Walkers a year ago through the speakers, the sessions, the conversations that I was having with different ones there. And it was almost like, remember when you're a kid and you're learning how to swim and you're in the deep end. You're already scared out of your wits, all right, as a kid. Now, side story here. So when I was about, 7 or 8 years old, maybe I wasn't quite that old yet, my uncle used to have a pool. And it was an in-ground pool with the deep end and the shallow end, and we always played the shallow end. And my uncle thought it was really funny to put a life jacket on me and my brother and to toss each one of us screaming into the deep end. He put a life jacket on, and we are just scared to death, and he throws us straight in the deep end. And we just, we bob up to the top with this life jacket on, still screaming the whole time, right? Scared to death. So when you're a kid in the deep end, and you're clinging to the side of the pool, and you don't want to You know, maybe you've got a life vest on, and you don't want to let go of the side and float in the middle where you're out of control. And that's what it felt like God was asking me to do at Faith Walkers more than a year ago now. Like God was saying, "You're right, Ashley. I have given you a fantastic career. It's from my hand. I've called you to this place. And it's not first place, though. Are you willing to lay that down?" Again, just like I talked about last week when I put my fiance on the altar and I said, "God, what does this mean? We have plans. A couple months, we're going to be married. Does that negate all of that?" And so here I'm asking God, in my career, is it really my life? Or is this, you gave this career to me. Must I lay that down as well and completely trust you with provision for myself, provision for my family? As a father and husband, that's my job. And do I lay all of that aside? Say, "God, I trust you." Do I let go of the edge of the pool and float in God's grace to provide and to take care of everything? So he gave me, in through the worship, through the times of prayer, I really felt God gave me very clear direction for the next 10 years of my life. And I had to lay down my life. And part of that, I shared in our testimonies when we came back that time, was just grieving transient relationships. We've moved around a lot since we were married. I went to the same school from kindergarten to senior year. And I graduated with 56 kids in my senior class. Really small Southern Ohio school. I was not used to, you know, my mom has ladies that she has known and shared life with for 40 years. These six ladies who've been through all the births, the deaths, the marriages, the divorces, they have been through everything with each other. And I have moved every few years from one town to the next for work, for church, different things. And I don't have those 40-year relationships in my life. And I'd grieve those things. And part of this embracing the cross and dying to self was saying, "God, this is part of my cross that you've given me, not having those things, but look at all the other things that you've blessed me with." Laying that down, my needs, my desires, and asking God, and having these other experiences when God comes to refine my soul, there was still a comfort that I could have in the midst of that, knowing that I've been here before. I know the touch of the surgeon, hand of God. And when he's done, this will be better. And I've seen him do that before, and I know he'll do it again. And I surrendered everything. It was no longer my life. Here's a quote from Dr. A.J. Swoboda, listening to one of his messages this week. He says, "Following Jesus has completely destroyed my life." He says, you'll probably never hear anybody else say this from the pulpit, but it's, you know, we always say Jesus has a wonderful plan for you. And he says, "Following Jesus has destroyed my life. What I thought was my life was going to be about has completely changed. My old me died." Christianity is not improving your old way of life. This is really hard for us to understand sometimes. It's your old way of life dying, and you have a new way of life. If you see Christianity as life improvement, you have not understood the nature of crucifixion. And when I heard him say this, it clicked for me. Wait a minute. I'm not trying to save my old life. This is a new life that Christ has called me to, which means dying to myself, dying to my desires and my wishes just as Christ did. Saying, Father, this is going to be really rough. If there's any other way we can do this, please. But your will, not my will, be done. And that was Christ's example. It's not trying to make your old life better. It's trying to give you a brand new, complete, clean, new life. Where Christ is first. So PFR, what in the world is PFR? That's the one thing I want you to take away from all this today. PFR, all right? It's not Pray for Rain, the band from the 80s or 90s. All right, I know what you're thinking, all right? They were a short-lived Christian band, all right? Pray for Rain, all right, PFR. It's not that. So what's in this for me? In Hebrews chapter 12 there, all discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet to those who have been trained by it, afterwards it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. The peaceful fruit of righteousness, PFR. PFR, the peaceful fruit of righteousness. What is the point of this? When God tells us to die to self, when Christ said, you're not worthy to be my disciple unless you hate your family, hate your own life. These strong, extreme words are saying to embrace the cross, to die to self, and to lay my life down. And to acknowledge that used to be me, but this is the new me with Christ on the inside that's in control. And I want to be careful that I don't want to try to transpose my experience onto yours, but I want you to understand that as throughout your journey in the Christian life, there are going to come times when, yes, you're saved. Check the box, we're good, all right? But there are going to be times in your life when God is calling you to the next level. And it requires you to die to self. You know, when I was a sophomore in college, I didn't have a lot of other things to die to, necessarily. But as I accumulated more responsibilities in life, more roles, more things that I was held accountable for, I have to continually turn those things over to Him and acknowledge that He is first over all those other things. So yes, there is this progressive nature of our relationship with Christ, that He is going to, there are going to be seasons in our life where He's going to call us. He's going to put His finger on it. We're going to feel the conviction of the Holy Spirit saying, you need to surrender this to me. And I love this word, trained by it. When you've been trained by it, there will come a time in your life with Christ that you recognize that voice of God speaking to you and you say, here we go again, Lord. You caught me. You're right that whatever it is, this habit, this hobby, whatever this thing is that is challenging first place with Christ, we have to embrace the cross. And as a result, we've been trained by it. We know what to expect on the other side of that surrender is the peaceful fruit of righteousness. It's peaceful. Oh, it feels so much better once it's done. It's fruit. God's going to use it. He's going to multiply it. It's righteousness. It's not my filthy rags. It's His righteousness. PFR. So our mission is to follow Christ's example in every facet of life, including embracing the cross, these places where He calls us to die to self. So we're going to do communion. Here, you can stand. And in just a minute, we're going to play a song. And this is how we're going to wrap up today with communion and some altar time. So just like last week, I want to invite you to come. Use the front here as an altar and seek God's will. What is it that He's calling you to die to? What is He asking you to embrace the cross. What, and that sounds so spiritual ease, so Christian ease. Embrace the cross. How do I do that? Are there places that in my heart that are challenging first place? And I put some questions there in your bulletin. What's consuming my mental and emotional energy? That's a clue, sometimes, to what is challenging Christ's first place in your heart. What is it that I... Where are these places that I keep coming back to with the Lord that I've not fully surrendered? These repeated places where I encounter God calling me to that place of sacrifice and I'm not ready to go there yet. These are all clues to lead us on this path of dying to self and embrace the cross. So I want you to think about those things this morning. What are those places that you need to completely, finally lay it down so that you can enjoy then that peaceful fruit of righteousness? So we're going to play this song, and while that's playing, you can come up, use this altar time to examine your heart as you take communion this morning. And then we'll dismiss in a little bit after that. But take as long as you need to pray this morning. Go ahead, guys.